week of November. So welcome in, everybody. Hope you're doing well. It is Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio today with Drew at the controls, because Dan, I believe the Troy women are playing in Montana tonight. Yep. And then he said they'll stop in Tuscaloosa on Sunday and play, but he'll be back on Monday. So it's Bill and Ferg here in the studio today. How are things going, Justin?
Pretty good. Still kind of getting my head around what happened last night at Neville Arena.
What a show.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable show it was. I mean, a Vermont team that traditionally has been very solid defensively and have a lot of the players returning from a year ago, looking for their fourth straight conference title, expecting to be in an NCAA tournament team again this year. And they had just beaten UAB two nights before, held them to 62 points.
Never trailed.
And 0 3-pointers. Man, Auburn last night shot lights out. Led by Miles Kelly. What a show Miles had after he missed his first 2 3-point attempts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he missed his first three shots, and they were all within like a minute. And I remember thinking, like, you know, okay, let's see if he kind of eases back or if he tries to stay aggressive, because they were open shots.
Mm-hmm.
And he knocks down, you know, Auburn missed 7 straight shots at one point in the game in the first half. It's kind of hard to think about that knowing how they finished.
And, you know, they also missed their last 7 threes, because when he hit his last one, Auburn was 16 for 28.
Yeah, they were chasing one more there for sure. And, they – you know, they got a really good bucket from Chaney Johnson, and the Denver Jones steals in the front court, flips it out to Kelly. Kelly sets and hits it. That sequence kickstarts an 18-3 run. And then it's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen from an Auburn team in a game. So they're up 25 at the half.
Mm-hmm.
And then
– I mean, early second half, you looked up, and I mean, it's 40.
Yeah, they between the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half, Auburn goes on a 45-6 run.
Yeah. It took them forever to get to 30 points. They hit a three after Auburn was up 84 to 27, a 57-point lead. They hit a three to finally hit the 30 mark.
And I can't stress to people who might not be aware, Vermont does not lose like this.
No.
This does not happen. They play a slow, methodical, grinded-out kind of basketball. They hang in games. They frustrate teams that way. Auburn came in and just blew the doors off of them in this game. It started with defense. It finished with offense. It's one game. Mm-hmm. It's not going to – you know, don't start getting Final Four tickets because of this. But I will say this. I've been covering Auburn basketball pretty much the entire Bruce Pearl era and a little bit before then. I think that is the most complete both ends of the floor performance I have seen Auburn play. You know, just what they had to do themselves. Take away the opponent out of the equation, but just executing what they wanted to do. I can't think of anything better on offense and defense.
I saw a couple of people referenced Auburn's 94-40 win over Alabama back in the Coliseum.
Yeah. I mean,
it has been a while since you just shut a team down and blew them away.
This was a top 80 team in KenPom. Mm-hmm. This was you have never beaten a D1 team like this before under Bruce Pearl, and you do that in your first game of the season, first one that counts, against a team that, you know, like you said, I mean, 3 straight NCAA tournament appearances, 6 out of the last 8 conference titles. This is the gold standard of small conference college basketball. If you're going to play a paycheck game, there aren't very many paycheck opponents you could have played that were better than Vermont. They just aren't. They returned a ton of talent. They're really, really good. They had only lost twice since the new year began. One of them was Duke in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, for Auburn to do what they did in this game was absolutely phenomenal. I think the craziest stat for me from this game was Henry Patton at Rivals had it. The way Auburn played in the first half of this game defensively against Vermont, they could have not scored a single point in the second half and won.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. Like,
yeah.
Vermont got
Auburn had 46 at the half, and Vermont finished with 43.
Yeah, I mean that says so
Auburn's
much.
Auburn's bench outscored the entire Vermont team,
and Vermont's one of the best teams in the country, and have been for a while at avoiding turnovers. They had more turnovers than made shots in this game.
They had 12 at the half.
Yeah.
12 at the half.
And they are so used to not playing that way. Mm-hmm. And I thought Auburn's defense, the way they schemed them up, the way they got Vermont uncomfortable. But even when Vermont was playing their style and their pace, Auburn was like, okay, well, we know they have so much faith in that half-court defense that it just – I mean, I think the other crazy stat I saw in this game was that I believe Vermont was 4 of 22 on layups. The rim protection was just absurd in this game.
Yeah, it was. What a tremendous way to open the season for the Tigers last night. We'll talk about that with you if you were there or if you watched it. Love your thoughts on that. And we'll get to Auburn's next challenge, which will be quite a big one as they travel to Houston to take on the fourth-ranked Cougars. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, though, that's what we're here for. And you can join us by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. Or you can text us on the Drive text box, 334-564-1840. And that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, and Jack gets us started. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Bill, Justin. Bill, it was good talking to you last night at the ball game. I tell you what, the first 10 minutes of that second half, I think that may be the best basketball I've ever seen inside that Neville Arena. The thing about Miles Kelly, it wasn't, just the fact that he made those threes. I mean, a few of those threes, he was, that was well beyond NBA range, wasn't it?
No question. It seemed like they were getting progressively deeper.
How about this stat? I found this today. Miles Kelly went 5 of 7 on three-pointers from 25 or more feet out, which is considered a deep NBA three.
Right.
The Division I average is 31%. He shot 71% last night on deep threes.
That's incredible. Another thing that really stood out to me was the other player that stood out was probably Chaney Johnson and just how strong he looked mm-hmm. in getting to the basket and being able to finish. I'm sure as the season goes on, he'll face more physical lineups, but he sure looked promising, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about it a lot. Chaney Johnson, the transformation he has made physically since he first got here. Bruce Pearl said today when I asked him about it, he was like, you watch film of last season and you're like, hey, who's that skinny guy wearing 31 running around? And now he just looks different. Mm-hmm. He's playing different.
You can tell he's got so much more confidence now.
And Jack, you talk about this, needing to be physical. Houston is going to be the gold standard of what you need to be against physically on Saturday night. But, I mean, yeah, the way Chaney played, it was like 13-9 off the bench. I mean, mm-hmm. That it was a phenomenal performance for a guy who had a great preseason.
Yeah,
as well.
led the team in rebounding last
yep.
night.
Exactly. Just one more question. Well, I'd love to hear your guys' comments on it, and I'll hang up and listen. We had heard about the potential lineup of having Dillon at the 5 and Broom at the 4, in the game at the same time. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts about that, and always good talking to you.
Hey, good hearing from you, Jack. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, it's interesting because they did it last night. They did it in the first two games against Furman and Florida Atlantic, the exhibitions. They start the game with the double big lineup and then never go back to it. They start both halves with it, and then the rotation is staggered with Broom.
You just have one of the guys at center, and that's it.
Now, Pearl did say today that they might go to it more against mm-hmm. Houston if they can stay out of foul trouble, which that's the other thing. Last night, Auburn barely sent Vermont to the free throw line.
Todd was the only guy in any kind of foul trouble.
Yeah, and it's just
nobody else had more than three.
Yeah, and for Tahad, it's hand checking. It's mm-hmm. getting too aggressive out there on the perimeter. But yeah, they did a really good job of limiting that. My thoughts on that, I'm very interested at why Auburn is going to that early and then not going back to it. It is interesting that it's not a lineup we see frequently. However, I can see why a team like Vermont and maybe a team like Houston on Saturday night, why Auburn would want to throw. Hey, I mean, they have two centers that have played a whole lot of college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They might be one of the only teams in the country that can say that. So it is an advantage, but to Jack's earlier point, if Chaney Johnson's playing the way that he's playing here, I think he's a guy that you need to start and play a lot. Now, ultimately, you know, who starts doesn't matter as much as who finishes and who plays the most throughout the game. But that lineup, yeah, just the fact that they're just starting the games and starting the halves with them but not going back to it is just one of the more interesting things. But like I said, Pearl mentioned they might do a little bit more of that against Houston.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that maybe you start with that because you like your possibility of, you know, if they miss a shot, you're going to clear the board. You can get out quickly, something like that. But again, if Chaney can stay out of foul trouble, he's a guy that can rebound with anybody.
Yeah, he is an upgrade from Jalen Williams in the rebounding department, and I think when you saw him play last night on the offensive end, he could do a lot of – I mean, how many times last season, or really the last few seasons, did you see Auburn get the ball to Jalen Williams in the mid-post, low-post, and he just found a way to get a bucket? Mm-hmm. Chaney's developed a little bit more of that.
Chaney's really – I mean, and folks –
he's very smooth.
There were a lot of people that last year after they heard Bruce talking about Chaney sort of rolled their eyes and went, yeah, we'll see. I mean, Chaney is extremely athletic, and, I mean, he's gotten bigger and stronger, and you can see the confidence. He made a couple of really nice moves last night, you know, down in the paint.
Yeah, great moves, and I just – the confidence for him is just radiating right now on the offensive end, and that's exactly what you want. And, you know, I said it all offseason. Auburn doesn't need Chaney Johnson to be Jalen Williams. They can get that production from other guys. But, I mean, heck, Chaney Johnson did a pretty good chunk of what would get from Jalen Williams last night.
If you can get 10 to 14 points and, you know, 6 to 10 rebounds a game – oh, you're
one
gravy,
of the man. You're a great starter on this team for sure. And I mean it's a great performance from him. I thought I expected Auburn to lean on its size and really beat Vermont on the boards. UAB did that the other night against Vermont. I didn't expect Auburn to do that and then also just not miss from deep hardly. This was the best three-point shooting percentage that Auburn has had in a game where they shot at least 30 threes since 2020, since the COVID year. So you're talking about a really, really just high-octane offense. Miles Kelly just went nuclear there in that stretch. Five threes in less than 4 minutes.
He's not going to shoot 60-plus percent from three all the time, but he is a threat. He is such a good shooter, and that's going to help this offense.
Oh yeah,
so much. I mean, teams can't be concerned about Auburn's front court when you've got a wing with that kind of size.
Yeah,
that can shoot it, and that's gonna make things better for everybody, for Denver, for whoever the point guard, whoever the point guard is. Because Auburn's got some other guys that can shoot.
Vermont's head coach last night after the game said, we did not want Broome to beat us.
Right.
We doubled him. We packed it in against him. And then they made us pay from deep. And he's just like, obviously that wasn't the right call to make tonight, but it was the one we thought was the best
mode. He's the most proven, you know, guy on the
All-American
team. He's a preseason All-American.
And it's so funny that a quiet game from Jani Broome where he's getting double teamed is like 13.7 boards, few blocks. Like, it's just do not take that for granted. He is one of the highest floors of any player in the country, I don't want to say this to pick on a guy, but Miles Kelly, what you can get out of Miles Kelly this season compared to what you were getting out of Katie Johnson, because that's basically what you did is you traded Katie Johnson for Miles Kelly in the portal. You could talk about the point guard position moving around and all, but it's just it's night and day, because this is a guy that, you know, he proved at Georgia Tech that he could get those kind of avalanche type of shooting performances. He had several games at Georgia Tech where it's like he had 7 or 8 threes in it, and Auburn hasn't had very many guys be able to do that. I mean, Jabari was the last guy to hit 7 threes in a game for Auburn. Bryce Brown's the only one who's ever hit 8 in that arena. So like that was the type of performance you were looking at last night, and it wasn't just him. I think Auburn had 5 guys hit multiple threes in this game. So it's just like pick your point. Jani Broome hit a James Harden step back corner three that early in the game where I was like, where did that come from? Like, it's so many weapons. And I think Kelly can be such a difference maker for this team, because Now you have. Well,
if there'd been another half second on the clock, he would have had eight.
What I mean, what was that? Too.
I am telling you, if you weren't there, if you didn't, I don't know if they showed
they
it
didn't,
on TV.
They didn't get a the camera. Didn't get it.
I mean, because I was there and I saw. I couldn't tell who it was at first because all right. So Drew, the ball gets inbounded. First half basically done.
Yeah.
And the ball gets inbounded, and I just see a guy turn and just flip. Almost it was almost blindly fire it. From one end, I mean, he was barely in bounds.
It was a 90-footer.
It was a 90, like, I mean, it was a 90-something because it's 94 feet, right? Yeah, it was like a 91 footer. And I mean, he just fired it on a line and
straight.
Switch.
Yeah, straight in. And that should have given us.
It sounded, but I mean.
That should have given us a sign that dude was just going to hit everything. His last. Okay, so the streak that he hit. The first one is a step back from dead on on the logo. The last one
one was unbelievable.
He is even with the scores with the end of the scorers table. He is right in front of the coaching box. He catches it and does not hesitate.
No, he didn't. And I said, "Nah." It's like I went, "Nah, wow." Yeah. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
The only other time I can remember
the net barely moved.
The only time I can ever remember something quite like that, where it's like you're watching a guy. Who literally everything he's putting up in the air is going in. Several years ago, Klay Thompson had 37.25 mm-hmm. against the Kings, and the end of that run. They run a play. Thompson's in the corner. The Kings double team him. He catches the ball at his ankle and just throws it up like that, and it goes straight in. That's what that reminded me of because it's just like if he just put it on frame, it was going in, and I had never. Seen a college player do that like he did.
No, it was unbelievable.
Meanwhile, and this is not to take anything away from. I mean, Miles Kelly obviously is going to get a ton of credit, and he should for that game. Dan and I were talking about this today when we recorded our podcast. Denver Jones, if Miles Kelly didn't have the game he had, we would be sitting here talking about Denver Jones' performance.
Denver was Auburn's leading scorer until Miles just. Lost his mind until he went unconscious.
6 of 7 from the field, 2 of 3 from deep, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. I think he had one turnover at the point guard spot. I mean, that is, by the way, that point guard position. I know there's a lot of trepidation, and it's just one game. I thought they played really well together against Florida Atlantic. I thought they played exceptionally well against Vermont. J.P. Pegues, couple threes, no turnovers. Mm-hmm. Tahad only had one, I think. Denver only had one. And it never felt. I don't know if this. You felt this way, Bill, but like it never felt like during the game. It was like, oh well, this guy's in the game. The offense is going to run differently.
No, you're right. There was no difference at all.
They were just moving it around, and that's a really really good sign. It's a super deep team. It's a super deep team that's got so many weapons, and like Miles Kelly said last night, he's like, you just can't focus on just one of those guys. You got to pick your poison and. Vermont chose the let's see if Auburn can beat you from deep, and they did. And that was the other thing, too, is like Auburn still scored on the inside in this game. Mm-hmm. But Vermont, I mean, it was just the difference was this is a team that is a really, really good three-point shooting team. They were last season, and I think they got the potential to be even better this year.
Great start for the Tigers, no question. We'll look more at the matchup against Houston as we head on through the show. Obviously, we'll talk some football as well. Love to hear from you. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390, as we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
Before every Auburn home game this season, check out the home plate
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Dan is in Montana with the Troy women's basketball team.
By the way, talking to Dan today, I asked him because we were recording. I said, hey, what's the temperature in Montana right now? And he said,
I think it's cool.
And he said, it just got to 30. It's been snowing since they've gotten there.
Oh, so it's warmed up to 30?
Yeah,
oh,
it warmed up to 30, or to 30. And I said, well, Dan, as we record this, it is 78 degrees in Auburn, Alabama. So it's incredible to think that you know, on the complete other side of the country, they are like they're going through winter already. Yeah. Like it is, well, it is straight up winter season, you know, wintery season up there, and we're still in this like weird, like late summer, early fall type of scenario. It feels like.
Yeah, well, I mean that's Montana. It's not that huge of a shock.
The only time
they were in Buffalo before that, well, I would imagine it wasn't exactly warm. It was maybe a little warmer in Buffalo than
the only time I've ever been to Montana. It was early June, and it was snowing still. So, like, it just feels like a completely different planet from where we are right now.
Yeah, we've had really nice weather. It's been it's been very pleasant. Now. That's not a great segue into talking about football because it hasn't been extremely pleasant. Auburn with another opportunity this past Saturday, but I mean it was same old, same old. We've seen this story before. We heard this song before.
The thing I said the other day was, I think this was as bad of a loss as I've covered in the last few years for Auburn because of what it represented.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I've seen much worse performances.
The last few years, though, like, you know, to only score 7 against Vanderbilt in an opportunity where you win, you can start looking at maybe a late season turnaround. I mean, it's just a blown chance by this team for sure. And you know, only scoring 7 points, and the one touchdown you got was a very low percentage catch and run from Rivaldo Fairway. It's just brutal. And I keep going back to the fact that Vanderbilt had given up 30-plus points in a lot of their games this year, so it wasn't like this was a dominant defense. Georgia State won a shootout against him. Georgia State hasn't won again. That was in the middle of September. Right. Like, so, you know, it's –
No, Vandy's – I mean – Give them credit.
They did what they needed to win.
They played hard. They're sound.
Yeah.
But they're very beatable. But, I mean, you have to –
They went two quarters without a completion.
They did. They went two
quarters. Second and third quarter.
Two quarters with, I think it was about 14 total yards. I mean, it was unbelievable. They did – Auburn was getting three and out, and Pavia was doing nothing. But Auburn could do nothing. You hold a team to 227 yards, and you lose.
Yeah. You hold a team to 17 points at home day and age in college football. You should win.
But, I mean, I don't know that, you know, if Auburn had been able to do anything, I don't know that they've been able to muster that many yards and points. So.
No, I think the thing that Hugh Freeze and this staff, especially Hugh Freeze, it's going to kind of haunt them from this season the most is that last year – they beat Cal, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt on the road.
I saw your tweet on that.
93 points, and then this year 35 at home. And again, Cal, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, all better teams than they were last year. Absolutely. But Auburn should have been a better team than they were this year.
Right. And the thing is, some of the statistics would tell you they're more talented than they were a year ago.
More talented, moving the ball more explosively, but gotten a lot worse at finishing drives.
Much worse. Defensively, Auburn's pretty darn good.
Defensively, they've turned a corner. And again, this is where I think the problem lies for Hugh Freeze moving forward, is that this was the year where he took more ownership of the offense, got more hands-on with it, and it got worse.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the other side of the ball, new guys, new coach, you know, new coordinator, that one's gotten better. And it's just that's going to be tough to swallow. No matter what happens down the stretch this season, it's going to be tough to swallow. And, like, I can see how Auburn gets better next year and improve, but it is far from a guarantee, even with a new quarterback, even with whatever you want to say, because you got worse when you should have gotten better. You have a better roster, you were in year two, and that side of the ball has regressed, and that's a tough sign. It's not like doomed to like it'll never get better, but like it's as bad of a sign as you can have for an offensive minded head coach who was brought in to fix that problem.
Well, there's so many questions that can't be answered yet. The question, you know, you have people saying, well, you just need that quarterback. Is that the case, or is the offense is it a situation where the offense maybe isn't as difficult to to handle as it used to be for defensive coaches. I wondered and have wondered this a few times. If Hugh Freeze trying to run his offense without the players he needs to run his offense, or is it something else that wouldn't be as good an answer for people that are looking for the future? And if that's the case, is it that difficult to change your offense to fit your players better? I know that they've tried to do some of that, but it's been more like we're just going to cut out some of the things we're doing, but we're still going to stick with the basics of it.
Well, and I think you come off a week where you ran Jarquez Hunter you did, and then he gets a fraction of the touches in the game. Now, Auburn's offensive line didn't play nearly as well against Vanderbilt as they did against Kentucky. That's a fact, but only two carries in the second half. Mm-hmm. And both of those carries were pretty good ones. Eight yards, five yards.
Yeah. He did catch three passes there down the stretch. But it's crazy. He wasn't on the field much.
That's the thing where it's like it just feels like this offense lacks an identity, lacks knowing what they're good at and they can go to. And look, Peyton Thorne and this quarterback in this offense, it hasn't been good. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it has been. No. You look at his numbers, though, they're not, like, dreadful.
Oh, no.
They're not like we cannot win with this.
This is going to surprise some Auburn people. His numbers at this pace for a full season, he's going to be up among the all-time single-season leaders for Auburn in passing.
He's got significantly better numbers across the board than Carson Beck does.
Yes, he does.
And yet, you know, Auburn hasn't been able to – and it goes back to finishing drives and your opportunities. It's just this offense seems to lack that kind of killer instinct and find a way to get over the top. And we'll see. We'll see what the answer to that is. Like you were saying earlier with Freeze, it was like, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he's just lost his fastball as an offensive guy. I mean, it's been a minute since he's had an offense in the SEC operate at a high level.
Well, I mean, and
football's
some,
changed.
Some offenses, yes, I mean that are very, very successful. Defenses, eventually adjust.
Auburn had a very successful head coach here a while back who his offense once his offense
it was innovative,
and then when it got adjusted to, he had a harder time adapting after that, and I think we might be seeing some of this right now with Freeze. It's just the catching up and all that did not happen here. It can't. You arrived here with things having already changed as much. Doesn't mean it can't get fixed. Doesn't mean it can't get better. But there's a lot. There's a lot. You know, and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. The Observer, like, I don't know what Hugh Freeze does here because if you, like I said, if you got your hands on more of your hands on this offense this year and it regressed to the level it does, what do you do? Do you feel like you have to give it to somebody else at this point?
Step back, and that's really tough for somebody who that's all he's been is,
correct.
Is the offensive guy.
You literally went through that with Gus Malzahn.
Absolutely you did. All right, 321-1390 is the drive hotline. Do we need to get to break, Drew? Millhouse, if you can, hang on. We'll be right back, and you'll be up first when we continue with the Thursday drive.
ESPN 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and let's get right to the drive hotline. And Millhouse has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Millhouse.
Hey, how are y'all this afternoon?
Pretty good.
Two things. Number one, I've listened to him talk about Thorne's stats this year compared to Beck, but what are they at crunch time?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think that's the thing that will show what this season is. Bill, I think we've talked about this before. It's like numbers are good, but like they can feel very empty.
Right. Is better than a pretty loss any day of the week.
100, especially for this team.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But my other question was, I know everybody was all hyped up about our O-line hire when Freeze came in, but it reminds me of watching a quarterback progress under Gus. They just never got better. I just don't understand is it the talent that we have, or is it the coaching? And I heard, I think it was Tuesday, I think Brian might have said it, that there may be some changes on the offensive staff, and that would be the first one that I would look at, because you can't do anything without the big boys up front giving somebody time. Look at Mahomes in the Super Bowl when he played Tampa. You get pressure on somebody, they become very average. And when you have an average quarterback and get pressure on them, they become very below average real quick, like taking sacks on fourth downs and on the last plays of halves. So something a sophomore high school quarterback should know better than. But I'll let y'all discuss that. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate the call, Milhouse.
Yeah, this offensive line has not gotten better this year. They were a unit that was, you know, sometimes good but inconsistent in run blocking last season. I think that's fair to say they've done that this year. Pass protection has been a weakness back-to-back years now. I think it's true that Auburn's offensive line talent level is lacking and has been for, good grief, several years now.
Maybe a decade.
Yeah. Right. I think
– most of a decade, for sure.
I think 17 was probably the last line I felt like, oh, that was a really good line. It's a tough spot to be in, especially when you talk about a coach and the future there, because Auburn's recruiting really, really well on the offensive line.
And
they're getting
Jake,
a lot of
– Thornton is more than a minor factor in that.
Correct. Like, they're getting a lot of the talent, the stars, the star power, the numbers that they need to rebuild this offensive line full time. But it's kind of like – it's kind of like the offense as a whole, the team as a whole, I think. It was like getting recruits is phenomenal. You have to have that. Be happy for it. But if that – those guys have got to – it's got to turn into results, and we're not seeing it.
Yeah, then they have to be coached regardless of how much talent they have. And
the offensive line is the one position group where you're just like, yeah, like recruiting up there is really well, but it can lie to you, and there's no telling who develops and does what. So
And I, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, there's still not a stud tackle.
No.
Auburn's got a very good-looking group of inside guys.
Correct. Yeah,
they're still looking for that big-time tackle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it.
334-321-1390, back to the drive hotline, and KJ is up next. Hey, KJ.
Hey, good evening, guys. I just have a question for you. I'm not even sure if it's logistically possible, but you know how we have the paycheck games during the season? I would like it for us to kind of open up with a more competitive opponent, you know, so we'll have a better barometer of the team. Is it possible to do like a paycheck exhibition in the spring, like for A Day, with like, say, for instance, an in-state school like an Alabama A&M, Alabama State, I mean, even UAB, I don't really care, really, but where we're still kind of giving some money or sharing a purse with a in-state school, and we don't, like, I really feel, I just have a theory, I kind of feel like we saw these passes in that first game and we were like, oh man, Peyton Thorne has really turned the corner and we can pass on everybody. And I feel like the staff, I think there was like a false sense of confidence in that aspect of the game, and it may have burned us on a couple of games early, because we probably should have been running Jarquez all year.
Honestly. Yeah.
I'm just curious. I don't know if that's logistically possible. We could still do the paycheck game as an exhibition in the spring, and then schedule like an out of conference team in the fall, home and home, like, and just start playing good teams early. You know?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you know, Hugh Freeze has talked in the past about how much he wants to do that idea. Currently, as it stands right now, the NCAA will not allow that. Like, you cannot play those exhibition
games. Hey, but they lightened up in basketball and finally let you at least play exhibition games where they didn't have to be those secret scrimmages.
Correct.
As long as the money was going for a charity. If they could do the same thing with football, it'd be a great charity fundraiser.
There needs to just be enough of a push, I think, among coaches, sitting coaches right now, to want to do that. From what Free said earlier this year, he seems to be he felt like he was in the minority there. Basketball, obviously, a whole lot easier to kind of set those up.
I would imagine a lot of football coaches just don't want to show that much, and things can change an awful lot from the spring to the fall.
But it's a great idea. I've loved that idea, and for years now, I've thought that was a great way to kind of do that. Maybe one day we'll get to that point, but I think just more coaches have to get on board with it first.
Understood. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, KJ. And all right, he brought up something. I was thinking about this when we were talking either sometime here in the last couple of days about the Auburn offense. And, you know, one of the things that Hugh Freeze offenses have been known for is their explosive plays. Mm-hmm. Early this season, Auburn was making explosive plays, yeah, but they were turning the ball over.
Correct.
And how much of being more conservative, being more careful with the offense is directly linked to the lack of offense. You don't take as many chances,
yeah, yeah,
if you're trying to be conservative. And I think, you know, I go back to Hugh talking a couple of weeks ago about coaching not to lose, not being able to coach free and things like that. And that's where, all right,
this is
your last
Andy.
Chance, yeah, to really, if you're going to do something about it. And we haven't really talked about his comments yesterday on the SEC teleconference. I mean, if they, yeah, are contemplating making changes at quarterback, and I would assume other positions as well, then this is when to do it.
And to me, Bill, it's odd that you would still be contemplating it. I feel like
I think it's just because, all right, look, we're not going to reach the goals.
Yeah.
And we absolutely need to know for sure who we want back on this roster, because you've got, yeah, to.
You know Thorne's not going to be back.
No, that's right.
And so, I mean, even if you come out and say, I think you'd have to go one or the other. Just say, hey, you know what? We're turning the page. You know, Peyton's given us a lot, but we got to look ahead to the future. Or come out and say, hey, look, we got three games left. And if we win all three of them, as unlikely as it may be, but like if we win all three of them, we're going to a bowl game, and like we still can mm-hmm. do that. Mathematically, they can still do that. Just kind of be decisive one way or another. I think that's the thing. It's just, and I feel like there's so much about this team and this season this year where you feel like Auburn hasn't been nearly as decisive, right, and this is just another example of it.
Yeah, it sounds like well, we could.
There's a lot of factors at play. There's a lot, and it's a tough decision to make. We were saying that before the New Mexico game, mm-hmm, about how tough this call was going to be if you wanted to make a change at quarterback. So don't. It's not me downplaying the pressure and the importance of this, but I do think that, like, if you're going to make a call, make the call. Mm-hmm. And one way or another, stick to it and be decisive so that you can have something ready to go for next week against ULM.
Let's get back to the Drive Hotline. We'll get one more call before our final break this hour, and Brian is next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Ferg. I think, Justin, what you were talking about with the whole, Thorne and his numbers, I think the one argument that I continue to have on that is, like, you know, looking at that game on Sunday, and I was in the stands, and I purposely watched the wide receivers more than I probably ever have. And, yeah, Peyton was making completions, but there were guys that he missed or never looked towards that were running wide open. Mm. And I think, to me, that's the thing that I still think I still think Coach Freeze's offense works. I'm frustrated that he hasn't changed from it, because he keeps putting Peyton in these positions as if Peyton's going to change, which I don't think everybody would agree is not going to happen at this point. But to me, I think his offense works if you have a competent quarterback. I think, you know, take for instance, just real quick, we had a third and eight, I think. You know, he runs a 6-yard out, never looks away from that one guy. He completes it, so that's a completion going against his yards, but it's fourth down and two now.
Yep.
And meanwhile, you had a guy to the left, if he had looked, that was wide open. And so to me, that's the thing. Like, yeah, his numbers are okay, but I just think he's missing a lot of players. And again, maybe that's on Bree telling him to not do that because they're worried about interceptions, but I have a tendency to disagree with the fact that he puts up decent numbers. I think it's little things that he misses here and there that cause us to kind of have a downfall.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Brian, like, I think your points, all those points are valid. I think the thing is that I think my point with his numbers is, like, these are numbers that aren't killing you. Like, you know, you could still win with a quarterback like that, but you're right. I mean, we've watched it now for a couple of years now. With Peyton Thorne, is like there is a tendency to lock onto one receiver. There is a tendency, mm-hmm, to, you know, not be able
hold
to go
the
through hold the ball. Don't go through the progressions and all that. So yeah, it is limiting. I think Auburn's offense has bigger problems than just the quarterback, but there's no doubt about it. As the guy who runs the offense and touches the ball every single play, he is a key part of that, and it is a tough spot to be in because, you know, it's what I was saying earlier. It's like Auburn's offense as a whole. There's a lot of empty stats attached to it where it's like, oh, they're moving the ball well. Oh, they had 100 more yards than Vanderbilt mm-hmm. did in that game. Well, when they get across the 40, they can't do anything with it. They're missing opportunities left and right. And yes, quarterback plays a big part of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and don't forget $60 a year. $6
a month. Hey, how about this? $40 a year or $4 a month right now because we're running a basketball schedule. Sorry.
Hey, you know what though? I pay the $6 a month because I'd rather pay you more for what you do than give you.
Hey, that. I appreciate
what a guy,
that.
Brian,
that
what a
that's great. Thank you so much, Brian.
All right, y'all have a good one.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Right back with more of your calls here on the Thursday Drive.
Since 1997, River City
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes of hour number one here on this Thursday. Let's get right back to the drive hotline. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I don't think there's anything wrong with offense. You freeze runs because if you watch any of these folks who break plays down on film, there's always guys running open. There's, you know, if you have a quarterback who goes 2 of 3 between the 25 to the opponent's 45 and then goes back, has 3 seconds, and doesn't know where to throw the ball, where to go the ball, go with the ball, and get sacked, takes a 10-yard loss, that's a drive killer. Hmm. When you go 3 of 4 and get your team down there on the other side of the 50, you got a 4th and 3 and you got 2 receivers open, and you make just an abysmal throw, that's a drive killer. When you have a 3rd and 2 and you run an option and you stop 3 yards before the end and pitch the ball, don't make anyone commit, that's a drive killer. Auburn doesn't have a quarterback who can make a decision and who doesn't panic. So, you know, I mean, it's not going to change. I mean, it's, you know, put Hank Brown in. He proved he doesn't. He can't read a defense. Travis Williams toyed with him. I mean, there were a couple throws that he made in that game that just awful. The one he threw out to the sideline to the right, that was just a little zone, and the guy just waited and ran over and picked it off. Hugh Freeze knew after the bowl game last year, he even said he needs to look hard at the quarterback position and make some changes. He didn't make a change. So, nope. You know, we're in the same spot. It kind of be like if we had allowed Kamala Harris to stay in office. We'd still be doing the same thing and getting the same results.
All right, Brett. Yep, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, we did see and hear those comments, and indeed, the changes that were made have not resulted in the hoped for results. 334-321-1390. Got a couple of minutes left here, and who have we got, Drew?
John.
John is up. Hey, John.
Hey guys, once again, thanks Skybar for paying for these calls. But I'll be real quick. Is Kendall Simmons still on the off-field staff? Or
no, he is. He is the offensive line coach at Middle Tennessee now. He went with Derek Mason and a few other guys who were on that Auburn staff.
I wonder if we have any other old offensive linemen that need a second gig and can come and, you know, do some of the on-the-field stuff.
Ryan Pugh's still coaching.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Couple other things real quick. We got a huge basketball game tonight over at Auburn High. Auburn's hosting Carver, who's number 9 in the state preseason. So, and you know they've got athletes, especially since they didn't they join forces with Lanier or something at one of those
yes.
schools over there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
But Auburn High, you know, they're going to be younger, and they've been the last couple of years, but they've got a lot of talent. I know Coach Brandt told me that when he scheduled Carver this early in the season, he was hoping they'd still be in the football playoffs.
Yeah, that'll be good. It's great. I'm glad you called with that, because somebody was just asking about basketball, high school basketball, yesterday.
Y'all still carry it on W. Lee?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, there was I heard an ad just a little while ago on the show about
that. Okay, so, fantastic. Yeah. Well, those are the main things. And Auburn High football plays Bob Jones tomorrow night.
That is right.
First round of playoffs.
So there is something for folks to do if they, aren't going out of town for anything this weekend. Oh, one last thing, Bill. Have you been over to watch the baseball team?
I haven't had a chance to yet. I thought I might swing by Saturday and watch some of their World Series.
Well, I saw Brother Man in town this weekend. He might be.
Oh, yeah, I bet he will be.
I think he's going to watch his granddaughter play softball, but he might pop in for a game or something.
Oh, that'd be great.
How about Barry's son, Barry Sanders, is Wimp's grandson? Is he getting to play some? Or?
I believe he may be at junior college. I believe he may have gone junior college because the roster. Yeah, well, he is. I think he was, and I think he still wants to, but the roster size still sort of up in the air. So until they know for sure, some of the kids are
when JUCO,
going JUCO to make sure they get the opportunity to play.
Okay. Well, thanks for the info, and War Eagle guys, talk to you later.
Great hearing from you, John. Take care, man. All right, hour number one of the books, right back with the second hour of the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. It's Bill and not Dan today. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
I look a little different than Dan.
No,
I'm not even in his seat either.
It's dark in the studio, but I can tell you're not Dan.
Yeah.
No. I mean, appreciate Don Dunn's been in a couple of days. Don's on his way up to Johnson City, Tennessee, where his alma mater, East Tennessee, is going to be honoring him.
Very cool.
This weekend. So
yeah, I hung out with Coach last week at Mama G's on the Friday show right before the 2004.
Yeah, he's about to head over for part of the 2004 celebration.
So really cool that he's had a busy couple of weeks. Yeah. People honoring him and his teams. That's awesome.
Yeah, no kidding. Great guy. But so he's headed up to Johnson City for that. And Justin's here in the studio along with me. Dan is in Montana where the Troy women will be playing this evening before they head back to the state of Alabama. So it's Bill and Justin Drew at the controls here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. And hour number two of the show is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika on the web at orthoclinic.com. And right now we'll head to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And welcome in our good friend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Sport Talk on WGOW there, just wrapping up his show a few minutes ago, and that is David Paschal. Hey, David, how's it going today?
I'm doing fine. I just heard Miles Kelly made another three, so that's good news.
Hey, Auburn desperately had needed somebody who could be a zone buster and a threat from the outside, and we haven't seen shooting like that here in a long, long time.
That was like video game, like once he warmed up. That was just wild to watch. And that's not a bad team they beat, obviously. I mean, y'all know that's a perennial. I mean, they make a lot of NCAA tournaments. Yep. And so sets the stage up for a pretty interesting Saturday night, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, no question about it. A matchup of, as KenPom got him as
number
top
one
two
and
teams?
Number two. Yep.
Yeah, top two.
It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I'll say this, I was sitting here thinking the last time I saw a player, a different way of doing it, but the last time I saw a player where I was like, if he puts a shot up, it's going in no matter where he is on the floor, was, in person for me, was Dalton connected last year with Tennessee and Auburn, where it was just like Auburn could have sent 12 guys to guard him, and it still wouldn't have mattered. So it's fun when you see a guy get hot like that.
You know, and that's the first thing I thought of, too. I mean, you see a guy get that hot, and you're just like, I mean, you don't want to just put the cart in front of the horse and say, this guy could be the next Dalton Connect. But, you know, what was so surreal is watching the highlights of that game, and the score's like 78-25.
Yeah.
And then he hits another three to make it 81-25. You're just like, this just doesn't – there's like a misprint here or something. But just his range, and I mean, goodness gracious, some of those threes were really deep threes.
Yeah, and Auburn hasn't had a guy. I had somebody, I guess it was my son, saying, I don't think Auburn's ever had a guy that with that kind of size that could shoot. And I went, well, a little before your time, there was this guy named Person. It was Auburn's had it's been a while, though. I mean, and it is, that makes it much more, makes it much more difficult for teams when you've got a wing that's got that kind of, you know, size, a 6'5 or a little larger, a little taller guy that can fiddle it up like that.
And, I mean, the league is just so much fun in basketball mm-hmm. when you've got multiple teams that can do damage. But, boy, those I imagine they're scalping those Alabama-Auburn tickets now.
Hey, none of the tickets. As a matter of fact, you're probably going to pay a little more for any basketball game than you will for at least Auburn's next home football game. I can tell you that. You're not gonna get it nearly cheap for basketball. And standing room, I mean, it was pretty full last night. I mean, it's a midweek game, and Vermont isn't the biggest name, but basketball people know how good Vermont is on a regular basis. And this was an experienced team bringing back four of their starters from a year ago. So that's an impressive way to get things started. And
Bill and Justin, do either one of y'all know how many tickets at Neville go to students?
I cannot remember anymore. They have expanded that a little bit more though this year because the overflow there is overflow higher up now too for students. But I can't remember
the
exact number.
That's the thing about our two older kids are at Tennessee, and that's kind of a pain for them. Well, you know, one's a sophomore, one's a freshman, and you kind of. You know, you start at the very bottom, and there's like a little point system. And if you go to different athletic events, you get more points to where then you can go to all the football games. But there are a lot of students at Tennessee that get locked out of football and basketball games.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, that was when I was at Auburn. My freshman year was the Elite Eight team. And I remember a student book was like $7, and it would get you into 13 games to watch an Elite Eight team. I mean,
so,
it was incredible.
So the – at Auburn basketball, the tickets are still free for students, but it is first come,
it's first
serve.
Come, first serve.
And
so
guys
mean,
start lining
you see
up.
Those lines.
Yeah, you
right.
start lining up super.
So
super
I mean,
early.
A freshman though, if he gets there, they get there early enough.
Hey,
they're gonna get in.
Hey, it's a big difference because I mean, you were saying, you know, you got to watch and be a student when there was a good basketball team here. When I was here, I walked in. It was the Anthony Davis Kentucky team. I walked in 10 minutes before tip-off and got on the front row of that game.
I was going to say, you could walk in during the national anthem a lot of those
so
times.
So pretty different changes.
Yep.
That's good stuff. Bill remembers, I mean, because in the late 80s, Auburn had really good basketball
teams.
But there were some of those, I guess Beard Eves was around 11,000, 12,000, and there were a lot of big games against. Well, Kentucky was usually sold out.
Kentucky and Alabama. That was the only two you could count on.
Yeah, but you'd have a really good LSU team come in there with Dale Brown, and it'd be like 7,500, 8,000 mm-hmm. people and 4,000 empty seats. It was wild.
Yeah, those were the days. Not anymore now. I tell you what, it is. It's really, really tough to find tickets. I mean, the standing room tickets are all sold out, you know, for the season.
My wife was had to fight hard to get a standing room ticket for the charity exhibition. That's how tough. Wow. That's how tough that ticket was.
Well. And what's incredible, and y'all know this too, is just it's easier for Auburn fans to get tickets on the road. I mean, our youngest wanted to go to an Auburn. We went to an Auburn Vandy game that Auburn lost at the buzzer a couple of seasons ago up in Nashville, and Auburn must have had 70% of that crowd. I mean, it was incredible.
I'm looking forward to seeing, and I know we got to talk football here.
The crowd Saturday night.
The crowd Saturday night. Obviously, at Houston in the Toyota Center, it's going to be a lot of UH fans. But Bruce Pearl said today they are expecting thousands of Auburn fans to be there, and they are glad that this game is being played in an NBA arena instead of Houston's on-campus arena, because it is going to allow a lot of Auburn fans to be able to go to that game.
Well, that's good. That's good. I tell you, you mentioned Pearl real quick. How honest is he on some of his news conferences where he's like, you know, I don't know if we can shoot it any better than that.
Yeah, no.
He
I mean,
he said that about game one.
Yeah,
prior to game one, yeah, he was talking about we played well, really, really well there in that Florida Atlantic, and he wasn't sure. Yeah, that's why he was concerned about Vermont. And then Auburn came out and just shot lights out.
Yeah, it's. I've never covered a coach who's more transparent about how he's feeling and what he's thinking at any given moment.
You know, and it's funny, covering Tennessee, I deal with three main coaches. Rick Barnes is good about telling it like it is.
Yes.
Especially if it's like, why'd so-and-so only play 6 minutes? He's like, because he doesn't play any defense. I mean, he's real straightforward on that. Tony Vitello with baseball will tell you anything. I mean, he's like an ambassador to college baseball. And then Josh Heupel of the three is certainly the most straightforward, kind of cliche-ridden of Tennessee's three coaches. But they're all very different. Very different to cover, which makes it fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess we ought to talk a little football. A couple of ball games, a couple of surprises last week. One, quite a few people liked South Carolina against A&M coming in. I was back and forth on that one, but, boy, that was an impressive performance by the Cocks.
Yeah, and it's hard to find if you had to pick the SEC player who's, like, most improved from the beginning of the year to now. I mean, Lenora Sellers, mm-hmm. South Carolina's quarterback, you know, that Old Dominion game, he took a bunch of sacks. He was real inaccurate. And then, you know, he's had kind of a pretty unique year because he got knocked out of the LSU game. And there was one game, I think it was like against Akron, where he didn't even play at all. But, I mean, he's just continually gotten better and better, and you just look at those numbers from the other day, you know, and you're talking about a 6'3", 242-pound guy, and, you know, everybody that played Cam Newton knows that's not a lot of fun to try to bring down someone that size or in that neighborhood of that size, but with him and Sanders, that just makes an incredible tandem with a 240-pound quarterback and a 230-pound running back, and I know Mike Elko after the game certainly said, we didn't bring our legs to this game because you've got to keep your legs going running through tackles, and they obviously didn't because each of them averaged over 7 yards of carry. So what a huge win for South Carolina.
No question about it. I mean, now we've got five teams with one loss in conference play.
It is chaos, and I don't know if that's what they – you know, and it's funny because we can talk – you know, you've heard the term, and you heard it a bunch on that ESPN ranking
CFP.
Show, which those can be kind of nauseating.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those where everybody's been talking about elimination game, and, you know, Tennessee-Alabama was supposed to be an elimination game, and LSU-Ole Miss was supposed to be an elimination game. But, you know – when you're talking about the SEC, two overall losses to me kind of puts you on that fringe. And so I know we'll talk about the games coming up, but to me, Alabama LSU feels like
an
you
elimination
can finally
game.
Use
yes.
the term elimination game without being hyperbole.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think a third loss, when you look at the standings, the rankings, there's so many teams with one and two. So I think that absolutely is. I guess we ought to get your thoughts on the Vandy win over Auburn. Auburn reverting back to its ways prior to the Kentucky ball game. And credit Diego Pavia, who wasn't 100%, and Vandy for just sticking with it, and finally being able to get the scores to win the ball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, and Auburn's had a couple of years like that in the past where, you know, when Auburn's had really bad seasons like in 08 and 12, I mean, you think about it, at the beginning of the season, there's a lot to like about the defenses, and they just kind of got worn down in those years because their offense couldn't do anything. And, you know, when you think about Auburn this year in the defense, I thought, you know, has gotten better in a lot of ways. And I thought the defense obviously played an incredible game to hold Vandy to 227. And so it's just the frustration of just absolutely wasting a really good performance by that defense.
Yeah, you're right. And now Hugh Freeze talking about, you know, they may consider making a change at quarterback. I mean, they're not officially eliminated from bowl consideration, but, I mean, it would take more than a minor miracle for Auburn to be bowl eligible by winning out over teams like Texas A&M and then in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how this team avoids 4-8. I really don't, which is just stunning. Mm-hmm. I never thought that was even on the table back in August.
No, you're right. So there will be some changes. We will see. Perhaps we'll see some next week on the field, and I'm sure there'll be some off the field as well down the road. But let's look at some of the ball games this weekend, and we can go ahead and start with that one you mentioned. I mean, Alabama in Baton Rouge, where for decades Alabama has held the upper hand, but LSU's been able to turn it around some recently. This is a really interesting matchup. I'm still not 100% sure about the LSU defense. The Alabama defense at times has given up some plays. Garrett Nussmeier is definitely a gunslinger. Will he take too many chances, turn it over? I just don't know. I think this is going to be an exciting game on the Bayou at night Saturday.
Oh, and I'm right there with you. And, it's going to be hard to top the excitement of 2 years ago and storming the field on a two-point conversion. I just, this is one of those that when in doubt, I just kind of like LSU being at home. I mean, Brian Kelly is 13-0 in night games at Tiger Stadium. He has just meshed right into that tradition because for a while there, LSU, I remember when I was at Auburn 1 year, LSU lost at home at night to Miami of Ohio. Mm-hmm. But no, I think Brian Kelly has really immersed himself in that part of LSU tradition, winning big games at night. And when in doubt, I just, I covered Alabama up in Knoxville, and Alabama had so many chances to put that game away and just never could. And when it was all said and done, Tennessee kind of won that game going away. I know they only won by 7, but they wound up outgaining Alabama by almost 100 yards. So I just Alabama's just a little bit off this year for whatever reason. It's a good team, but it's no means where we've seen Alabama in the past, and I think they lose another close one.
And Kalen DeBoer is looking for his first road conference win, 0-2.
True. He's 0 for Tennessee, so he's going to try another state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one could be really, really interesting. Before we get to the Georgia Ole Miss game, South Carolina Vandy is really interesting. As we said, I mean, what huge wins for both teams, but I thought really South Carolina, that was a gigantic win for them last week. And Vandy's going home. I know that's never been, a huge advantage for Vandy playing at home. Generally, the road team can have as many tickets as they want. But I don't know, this Vandy team, I'm wondering if Pavi is a little healthier, it's tough to count him out.
It is. I mean, it is tough to count them out of any game. It's interesting, of all the teams, and I'm going back to divisional play. I know we don't have divisions anymore, but of all the teams in the last 15 years that have dominated Vanderbilt, I mean, you think about Georgia, you think about Tennessee, you think about Florida, nobody has dominated Vanderbilt more than South Carolina. The Gamecocks have won 15 in a row in this series.
Well, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and that's something that none of those other teams can come close to saying. And so, yeah, I think South Carolina, they've really got a lot of momentum now. At the beginning of the first half of the year, we were just talking about, man, that defensive line for them and those edge rushers are not bad. But now, like I said at the beginning, with Sellers and Sanders, I mean, that's a nice offense that can kind of wear you down. So I don't think it's a blowout by any stretch, but I think South Carolina wins that game by like a touchdown.
I really haven't known which way to go. Another one I don't know. I mean, I haven't been that impressed by Missouri. Is Brady Cook out? Because I see the line has switched from Missouri being the favorite to being about a field goal underdog at home against Oklahoma.
That's interesting. I have not kept up with that one. This one is really hard. And this is the 7:45 or 6:45 Central SEC Network game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's the game that, some of these games kind of get lost in Never Never Land. And Kentucky's played in 4 straight of those, so I know they're glad they don't have the 7:45 SEC Network game this week. But, Oklahoma
just
has
just
been
off,
brutal offensively. And then, and it's one of those where they've just been brutal offensively. Their defense isn't bad. Missouri, you just don't know enough about. I know that I did read where they're, in on track for their first undefeated home season in about like 17 years. So they have taken care of business at home. I don't know. When in doubt, I guess I'll go with the home team there. But I did not know that about Brooks' status. I mean, Cook's status. I didn't know that.
Well, I think he's still listed as questionable. But I just saw when I saw the line jump, I said somebody knows something or has got a clue about something there.
Could be.
Can Florida with Billy Napier just getting the assurance from Scott Strickland that he will be the coach next year? Can they hang with Texas? I don't think they can win, but can they? Can they hang with the Horns for at least a while?
You know, all that depends on Lagway. And you know, I know they're trying, mm-hmm. but I don't think it'll be 50. I don't think it's 50-50 that he plays. And if they have to turn to Aiden Warner,
then no.
What a wild story that was.
Oh, no kidding. It's a great story.
Just started getting second-team reps 2 weeks ago when Graham Mertz went down, and then he gets thrust into the cocktail party. But, yeah, I mean – I will give Napier and Florida credit. I mean, you think about that was a 2-2 team before their first open date,
mm-hmm.
and those two losses were brutal. I mean, Miami and Texas A&M just went into the swamp and clobbered them. But then when you look at after the open date, those second four games, they also went 2-2, but one of them was an overtime loss at Tennessee that they easily could have won. And even after losing Lagway, they still had that game 20-20 with 5 minutes to go against Georgia. So, he's done a remarkable job improving, especially that defense as the year's gone on. But I just think Texas at home. I think if there's no Lagway, I don't see how Texas doesn't win by multiple possessions.
And then the mid afternoon game, which used to be the biggest one, and it really it's not as much. It's not a pure elimination game. It is for Ole Miss. I believe if they lose, they're out. The Rebels are, you know, trying to give Georgia their second loss. This is a Georgia team that has had, you know, shown a couple of dings in their armor as well. Carson Beck has turned the ball over at a fairly alarming rate, but it doesn't seem to affect Georgia winning lately. But this one's a real interesting game there in Oxford in the afternoon.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you think about it, you brought up the quarterbacks. I mean, Carson Beck, 6 interceptions in the last 2 games. You've got Jackson Dart, who leads the nation in efficiency. I think Beck's like 40th in efficiency. But like to your point, Beck's the one sitting there quarterback at a team that's second in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Dart, for all of his stats, I mean, there have been 2 games this year where Ole Miss has led in the fourth quarter and had possession, and they couldn't close it out. You know, a couple of things interesting about this one. Of course, last year Georgia won this game 52-17. In Athens, and then the last time these two teams played in Oxford, I actually covered that one. Ole Miss scored the first 45 points and won 45-14. That was Kirby Smart's first year at Georgia, and it was just Ole Miss just clobbered them. I think the interesting thing to watch in this game was last year Georgia rushed for 300 yards, hung 300 rushing yards on Ole Miss. Ole Miss right now is like second in the country in run defense, allowing 82 yards. You know, they brought in Walter Nolan. They brought in some studs on that defensive front. So I think that just becomes the huge story of this. I think, can Georgia run even for half as much as they did last year? I still like Georgia in this game. I think they get up for it like they did the trip to Texas. But who knows? Maybe they'll play a close one. Because like I said, last year in Athens wasn't close, and the last time they played in Oxford, it wasn't close.
No, but these are fun, as we're going to see slowly some more teams starting to drop out as we head closer to the end of November. So looking forward to them all.
Oh, and that's no doubt. I mean, that's the one thing that this expanded league is going to give us. It's going to give us, we've talked about it all season, the inventory that we've got now. If you just plop down on your couch at 12 Eastern or 11 Central, you're going to get games just throughout the day that most of them are going to be pretty doggone good.
You heading to a game this weekend?
Yeah, I've got you know what's really weird is Tennessee is playing their SEC home finale.
Wow.
They had a weird schedule where they opened league play at Oklahoma and then went to Arkansas, and they played 4 straight home games, Florida, Bama, Kentucky, and Mississippi State.
I did not even realize that, looking at the schedule.
Yeah, and then they close at Georgia and at Vandy. So this is it. This is it as far as their SEC. They do have another home game against UTEP, but this is it as far as the league. It's their earliest SEC home finale in program history.
So they've got Mississippi State. And of course, you know, Mississippi State, for being winless in league play, they actually do score some.
They've gotten better offensively, no question about
that.
They
have. They've scored in their five SEC losses. They've scored 24 or more in four of them. And so Tennessee, of course, with that defense, they're the only team in the country that has yet to give up 20 points in a game. So they're going to try to keep that streak going.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty comfortable in picking Tennessee in that one. So, well,
I like Tennessee in that 30-13 kind of range. You know, next week I'll be down in Athens for Tennessee, Georgia.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And that will be my 8th-9th game in 10 weeks.
Oh, that's great. That is just
well,
great. I'm sure. Yeah,
not when
you and the family
home
love
at one
that.
Or two in the morning.
Yeah, that's great. Well. At least you've got an afternoon. No, it's a night game. That's right. The Mississippi State Tennessee game is a night game as well.
The UTC season opener was in the afternoon, and the Alabama game was the 3:30 game because you had Georgia Texas at night.
Oh well. Well, you're used to it at least.
Exactly. I'm hardened, battle tested at this point.
All right, David. We really appreciate you spending some time with us. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you got going.
Yeah, timesfreepress.com and WGOW.com.
All right, David. Again, thanks. Have a good trip, and we'll talk to you again next week.
That sounds great, Bill and Justin. Y'all take care, too.
All right, David Paschal joining us, as he does each Thursday afternoon. We really appreciate him spending some time with us. We'll get to our next break. Open up the phone lines. We've got about a half an hour for you to get through here on the Thursday Drive.
For loving expert care for your pets, visit Moores Mill
7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday evening. Yes, it is dark. It is completely dark. Justin, are you used to the standard time now that
No.
we're off daylight savings time?
No, I'm still not a fan of it at all.
Well, it takes a while for the body to get acclimated to it. I mean, I wake up and I always feel pretty good when I wake up and go, oh, it's not as late as I thought. But, man, that makes up more than makes up for it when it's dark and it's not, you know, it's barely 5 o'clock. So yeah, let's just do one thing and stick with it. I'd be much happier.
That's my thing.
All right, we got a short segment here before we need to get back on track, as we spent a good bit of time there with David Paschal. We'll get back to basketball here after our next break. I wanted to toss this one to you though. We didn't quite get into a lot of conversation about it yesterday with our listeners, but I wanted to get your thoughts with Hugh Freeze yesterday talking about contemplating a change at quarterback. All right, so let's say Justin Ferguson is Auburn's head coach.
Yep.
What would you do here?
I would take this opportunity to try another quarterback. I would look at the situation and say, yes, we could win out and make a bowl game. It is unlikely at this point with the way that we have played, but you have an off week before a game against a not as good opponent as you will for the last two games of the year. Use this as an opportunity to try to break in another quarterback that you think may have a shot to be among the guys competing for the starting job next year.
Would you consider taking the red shirt off Walker White?
Well, I mean, he hadn't played yet, so yeah.
I would. I mean, I would.
You can play him and not red and still redshirt at this point.
He could play in every game, and even if you win them all, he could still play in the bowl game.
Correct.
And have a red shirt.
I would look at Walker White this week and see what you got in him. Honestly,
I mean, like we were saying, I mean, this is your chance if you want it, you know, to do something like that, because one of the things that Hugh Freeze has got to be doing is trying to determine, all right, who do they absolutely have to have for next year that they do their best to try to retain? Because that is a big, big part of coaching now is re-recruiting, retaining your player, roster management. While you're trying to acquire more talent, you're trying to keep as much of it as possible. And it could be an opportunity to look at some of those guys that, under different circumstances, put them out there on the field in front of a big crowd against competition other than yourself and see how they do. I would think if you're going to make a change, that Hank would be your first guy up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been the number two guy, you know, all year.
Yeah, but if you want to see what you have in a guy like Walker White, this is the time to do it. This is the time to give it a shot, even if it is, you know, maybe playing him some in this game or whatever. But I would make that call. I understand the reasons why not. I just, it's like I was saying earlier, this kind of no man's land of the in between, I don't think benefits anybody.
No, you're
from
right.
My perspective.
No, you're right. And I think it's better for everybody, for all the players involved, to know exactly where they stand.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
Now, one of the things Jason was on yesterday, and he brought up a couple of guys that I've nearly forgotten about. He said, hey, he thought it could be an opportunity, too, to look at a couple of the young guys on the defensive front, because that's a place where the defense has been very good. It really has. But you're still looking for, you know, a disruptor or two there on the inside, and maybe look at TJ Lindsey, DJ Reed, something like that there on the defensive front.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would be the opportunity to do that. You pretty much exhausted all your resources at in the secondary at this point.
Yeah, and they've been positive.
Yeah, no, they have been. A shame that Jamonte Waller's been hurt and is out. But
Amaris Williams is looking. I thought he looked pretty good against
Baylor. He did. Maybe run a little DJ Barber out there if you have an opportunity against ULM. That would be the other one I would think of, linebacker.
Yeah, Auburn's still, I believe, they're still leading the nation in defensive freshman minutes played and leading the SEC in both on both sides of the ball. So, yeah, they could add to it. Let's see, who's the other guy? Well, DeAndre Carter's a guy he's played. How many games has he played in? He's played in a couple, I believe. But yeah, I mean, he's another guy that you might look at here down the stretch. 334-321-1390. I tell you what, let's go ahead and get to break. We'll get back on schedule, and then who do we have, Drew?
Tex.
Hold on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 20 minutes away, well, actually 23 minutes away from 6 o'clock, about 20 minutes left here on the Thursday Drive. And let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And that number, 334-321-1390. And Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing pretty well.
Good. How are you?
Bill, I heard you talking about it getting dark early, and it reminded me of those old days. 4:15, it'd be pitch dark and cold during November baseball practices.
Mm.
So I never have gotten used to that. And now it's 5:30 here in Baton Rouge, 5:38, and it's pitch dark.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care for this time of year that way. So I'm doing great. I got to watch a really nice, good basketball game last night.
Yeah.
My wife and I got to sit down and watch it. And so, Bill, did you share my text message with everybody?
As to why you hadn't called and stuff, or what?
No. I'll say that before I hang up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, about if Chuck Person is the rifleman.
Wait. Yeah, okay. I'm yelling over text because I want text to be able to set the whole thing up. That was a great one. That was a great one, text. Go ahead and repeat it now so Justin and everybody can hear.
Yeah, so I was just sitting there, and Cindy first brought it up and said, man, have we had a guy since Chuck Person that could shoot the three like that or shoot the ball like that? I said, I don't know, but then maybe they should call him Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, wow.
Kelly just went off. I think what a great nickname that would be for him. I don't know if the coaches may like it.
May not be politically correct or something.
That's really
a great one, though.
I really like that one a lot.
Yeah.
So
let me tell you what. Those were rapid fire, man. I mean,
yeah, and
the ball barely touched his head the last
Janai
couple
Broome
times.
Janai Broome tweeted about Kelly earlier today, and I think his caption was unlimited ammo. So I feel like it's working here.
That's a natural. That is an absolutely natural nickname.
Well, his shooting form, I think if you just meshed all those together in a video, they would all look exactly the same. When he reached the top of his jump and releases the ball, it would look exactly the same.
I've never
seen anything like that.
It's really remarkable. I thought Denver Jones had a little bit of that to his game last season, but I noticed today, when I wrote my story, I had a couple of pictures that Auburn took of Kelly shooting, and there are two different pictures at two different points in the game. And if you look at them, I had to go back and check and make sure there were two different shots.
Yeah, it's like one of those things. Go, what's the difference in these two pictures?
It was one was zoomed in and one was far out. And it's you're absolutely right, Tex. Perfect. I mean, perfect form every time for him. Same thing.
Yeah, quite remarkable. And to see a team. I think Cindy and I forget, it may have been Alabama State last year. We're at that basketball game live. We kind of tanked it the last 10 minutes of the second half in that game. There was no let up in this. And I don't know if you saw Janiah Broome bring the five that were going on the floor to start the second half. The TV zoomed in on him. He was just on them. And they come out playing just tenacious defense. And yes, I know it's Vermont. But it was also, yes, it was Yale. So it's going out and handling it that way and going really through the majority of the game playing 10 people is just remarkable. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, last year, go ahead, Tex. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Well, so the other part, Bill, is apologies. People have been asking me why I haven't been calling. Last weekend, it was my first ever client 30 years ago passed away, and we were at the funeral. And we're dealing with something else a lot closer to the family right now. And so it's just been – there's been other things and right. business. I shouldn't complain about business. Business is really good, but still it's it takes up a lot of time, so I apologize.
Oh, no,
I'm gonna
answer
your
that's
question
no problem.
About will you pull a – would you start another quarterback? I'd play them all. What do you got to lose? Play it, let them each take a series and rotate them or take two of them and rotate – and none of them being the starter that you've had. Well, really, in the grand scheme of things, what do you have to lose?
I'm with you.
Yeah, you've got possibly some things to gain. Absolutely.
Correct. So I would do that. It's you know, I never thought I would see the day that Vanderbilt would be peacocking on our field.
Yeah.
And they were peacocking on our field, and that just is that makes me want to puke. But that's again, my love for Auburn University isn't dictated by whether or not the football team wins. But as my 4-year-old grandson told me one time, it's going to be okay, Daddy. Papa, it's just one game. But it's been more than one game.
It's not just one now. It's been six. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So I would vote for whoever your next two guys in line you think you have. I'd put them on the field and just – alternate series or give them two series each, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just give them the opportunity. You might catch fire somewhere.
That's right.
And yeah, it'll be totally different the week after playing against A&M, but you never know. We don't really know what they can do. They haven't been given an opportunity. We know what we have with Peyton, and he seems to be like a really good leader and a great kid, but he has some deficiencies. And he can't get the ball in the end zone. And you can't win if you don't get in the end zone. All right?
That is right.
I wish I had the ability to be over in Houston this weekend. I would love to watch that basketball game.
Oh,
and I'm not a big basketball fan. You know that, Bill. I can say this now.
Yeah, Cindy's not listening.
42 years later.
Oh, okay.
When my wife played, I tried to sit in every seat in Beard Eve's Memorial Coliseum because, oh boy, basketball was hard. It's just hard for me to watch. But I really have started enjoying the last few years of Bruce Pearl and what he puts on the floor. So, all right, guys. Hey, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Tex. Appreciate the call.
Good to hear from you, Tex.
Clay is up next. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Bill, and I just want to say that kind of interrupt a little bit. Thoughts and prayers, Text. It's when you lose, you know, somebody you love. That's no matter what the situation is, it's always that's something terrible.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and you know, us guys is in this weird the talk radio people, and I'm not a regular contributor, but I've listened my whole life, and I hate to date you like this. I think I was in single digits in my age when you and Jim Fife were doing radio here in Montgomery.
I just that just tells us how old you are. I could have been a teenager.
Yeah, well, you were not a teenager, but I'm 52 now.
Yeah,
so
okay, well,
you've been on the radio for a minute.
Well, you're right. Well, you know, and hey, there wasn't really sports talk radio until we got that started. We had the first show that went year round in the state back in 86 87. Yeah,
Bill, they had a t-shirt.
Oh, I've got a copy of the one with me and Jim,
caricature
of Jim and me. Yeah,
Jim.
Yeah, we still have one in pretty good shape, I think, that fits my wife. Yeah,
well, my mama threw all my old memorabilia away before
moms will do that.
And it drives me crazy that I have, but that's not what I called about. I called about Auburn, and now I'm going to date myself. We're talking about what a great game Miles Kelly had last night, and it was beautiful. Probably since, Brown was probably the last one that could really heat up, maybe Jared Harper, but being point guard is a little bit different than just being a true, wing shooting guard. Brown's probably the last one, but if we go back in time and we're talking about picking tickets up off the ground for free and going into the arena, paying $1 for tickets and sitting on
courtside. Oh yeah,
I'm talking on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this cat named Ronnie Battle that played at Auburn. And there was a Saturday afternoon that, unfortunately, about 1,100 people witnessed him drop. I think he dropped 43 or 48 on Georgia. And that's kind of what it reminded me of last night. Is Miles was like a half a Ronnie Battle, because when he came down the court, it was like, if you get it to Ronnie, it's going in the basket. And those were the teams I loved. They were so talented. They just, it reminds me of the Auburn football team this year. You see all the talent and the ability and the, Tommy Joe Eagles, I loved him so much. But you just couldn't win.
Yep.
Game,
Reggie Gallen was the point guard. Ronnie was from, I believe he was from Seal, wasn't he? Just down the road.
He was. Yeah. And then you had Wesley was, I think he was a freshman that year, is when he came in. You had Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have Adrian Phillips. You had Aaron Swenson and Rod Joyce and all those people. But back in the early 90s, we had some really talented teams that didn't make it. But Ronnie Battle is a forgotten Auburn sharpshooter just because we just didn't win. But he was amazing when he got hot. He didn't score 21. He scored 43. Is what he scored. So
well, Auburn's got a bunch of guys that can score. I think it's going to be It might be a little difficult for anybody, Justin, on this team to put up a 40 spot, just because they've got so many other guys that can score.
And that's right. And this is a different age, because I mean, back in the early 90s, I mean, we played six or seven. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
that was it.
Oh yeah, sure. Auburn didn't have anywhere near the depth that they do now.
And it was the three that were subbing in and out were the big guys that got in foul trouble. So it is a different time. It's not the number of points, but I just me being an old dude, and he was too short, I guess, to make it in the NBA.
Yeah, Ronnie was only about 6 foot tall.
He's like 6'1", something like that. And but he was one of the guys that I just really loved, and I've been a basketball fan for years and years and years, and it's so. I tell you what really hit me this year is when the preseason poll came out and Auburn was number 11.
I was angry.
Yeah, disappointed at being not in the top 10. That's right.
We're not in the top 10. And then, and as soon as that thought run through my head, I thought, holy mackerel, I've been going to ball games for 40 years. I would have begged for a 20-win season.
Hey, there weren't many times when Auburn was picked to be number 11 in the SEC.
I'm telling you, it's so fun, and I've enjoyed it so much. And I think football, we're going to be okay in the long run. But it's just so nice that our basketball program is to where, and I'm excited to see, believe it or not, what Alabama's going to do, how they're going to keep all those egos
yep.
in check.
Can they have as much success trying to play 10 guys as Auburn's having?
Well, and because you think about it now, Bill, when the kid came to Auburn,
Aiden Holloway.
Yeah, when Aiden came to when he came to Auburn, the other guy that went to Kansas, Filon,
mm-hmm.
he did not want to come to Auburn because he didn't want to have to play behind Aiden. He said those words out of his mouth. Now, those might have been false words. Well, now they both transferred to a team where they're going to be playing behind Mark Sears, the best college point guard in the country.
I thought it was interesting the other night, Filon played more point. And Aiden played more, too, the other night.
I think that's how it's going to have to be for him to work mm-hmm. in that system.
So, but I think, I saw –
Filon had seven assists and one turnover.
Another interesting thing I saw as well, though, this kind of made my mind start turning a little bit. I saw an interview with Charles Barkley, and he was asked the question, says, what is hurting the NBA more? Is it the load management – or the three-point shot being the only thing in, you know, that's valuable in the NBA. And Chuck, he took a second and he said, you know what, that is actually a great question. Because one, load management is, and you know what Charles Barkley would have said, is, mm-hmm. you know, BS. And he said the 3-point shot is killing the NBA because it's a 3-point, you know, shooting. That's every game is just a 3-point shooting contest.
Yeah, you're right. So, hey, yeah, I was gonna say, Clay, we are really up against it. Got to get to our final break.
I'm sorry.
No, man, it's great hearing from you.
It's taking too much time.
Oh no, that's a problem. Call back anytime. But yeah, we just got to get the sponsors taken care of. Get to our final break here on the Thursday Drive.
At University Ace Hardware, we're excited.